This is the Sheldon McLeod Show on News 95.7. Now, here's Sheldon.
Hey, at 5:08 Friday, it is Friday the 13th. Nothing unlucky about this in any way whatsoever. If you're a huge fan of hockey, this is a huge weekend for you. We've got the hometown hockey event on Sunday. Tomorrow, of course, a hockey day in Canada. And throughout the last several days, our next guest has been touring with Stanley. Mark Napier, two-time Stanley Cup winner, once with the team that drafted him in 1977, Montreal Canadiens. Second as part of the Edmonton Oilers in 1985. Bronze medal winner as well with Team Canada in 1982. And welcoming to the program, Mark Napier. Good day, sir. Hockey Day in Canada. How exciting is that? You get to come to our fantastic city.
It is. It's very exciting. I always love coming back to Halifax. I used to come for the Danny Gallivan golf tournament way back when, a long time ago in the summertime. I've actually never been here in the winter, so this is It's a little different for me.
And what a winter it is, eh?
Yeah, no kidding. They were saying like 3 weeks ago you had no snow.
But zero snow. Yeah, the groundhog came out of his hole and there was no snow at all.
Well, this feels more like hockey weather anyway.
It definitely is. How does Halifax rank as a hockey town?
I love it here. Just the people and just see how so far the city's embraced. We've done a couple of school visits and some clinics, and just everywhere we've gone, it's just been fabulous. Been welcomed with open arms, and I feel very fortunate to even share a little bit with people from Halifax.
Well, I heard our Hillary Windsor's report saying that you were kind of surprised the other morning at the Halifax Forum. So many people showed up to skate with the Stanley Cup at 7 in the morning.
I couldn't believe it. I've been with the Cup a few times in a few places. I know how revered it is, but I honestly thought I was on the 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock shift, and I figured there might have been 50 people there, and there had to be, I think, 300-400 throughout the hour, and it was very special. And just to watch the people line up to get their picture taken with it and to touch it, it's pretty special. It shows you what hockey means to Canadians.
Well, I'm not a huge follower of hockey, and just doing a bit of reading, and you started your career with the Habs. You're from just outside of Toronto. You won Memorial Cup with Toronto, I understand.
Uh-huh.
A little bit disappointed you never got to play for the Leafs?
Actually, I was. Grew up in Toronto. I was a Leaf fan growing up. The Leafs weren't very good when I got drafted by Montreal Canadiens, so I was very fortunate to have played with the Canadiens. Won a Stanley Cup there in 1979. And then the Leafs started getting better, later on in that decade. But I, looking back, it was actually the best thing that ever could happen to me was being drafted by Montreal.
And then off to Edmonton, your second Stanley Cup there?
Yes, very fortunate. I got traded actually for someone you guys might know here, Bobby Smith.
He came.
I got traded. I went to Minnesota, and he came to Montreal, and I've hated him ever since. But but it did mean getting the chance to get traded again to Edmonton and playing with that great hockey club. There's a guy named Wayne Gretzky on that team he wasn't a bad player, so it actually turned out pretty good for both of us.
I can't imagine what it'd be like to be a part of those teams at that time.
It was pretty special, especially, I was 21. I went to the Montreal Canadiens. They'd won 3 Stanley Cups, and I said it a few times. I actually took that one for granted. I just figured, this is easy. You just go and you play with Montreal and you win championships, and found out the hard way it wasn't necessarily that way, and I made sure when I won the Cup in 85 with the Oilers, I made sure I appreciated that.
I was going to say, your first one, that was just only the second year you were even a pro?
Well, I played 3 years in the old, what they called the WHA,
okay.
World Hockey Association, but first year with in the NHL, and like I said, that was such a great team. You figured you'd win the Stanley Cup every year, and obviously there was, I think at the time, 18 other teams that wanted it just as badly as you did.
Tell me a little bit about playing hockey in Italy. Is there a hockey culture in Italy?
More of a sulker culture. Everything was up in the north, so it was up in the mountains. We didn't get very far south. It was a little too warm, but I enjoyed my time there. It was near the end. It was right at the end of my career. I was 32, and I'd always dreamed of playing overseas. Actually, Switzerland was where I wanted to go, and then be up in the mountains. But Italy worked out well. It was actually still up in the mountains, up in the southern part of the Alps, and it was very nice. It was a great way to finish my career.
Are you a skier?
You know what? I never did ski. I can't believe I've actually never been on skis. I was always afraid it was in your contract if you got caught skiing and hurt yourself, they wouldn't have to pay your contract. And being Scottish, I'm pretty cheap, and I never took that chance. So.
as a McLeod, I can understand. So you moved from the ice, you moved to coaching, now the head of the NHL Alumni Association. Tell me a bit about that job.
Well, it's actually a wonderful job. I've been in had it for 10 years. I fooled them for 10 years, I should say. And we have 29 local chapters throughout North America, and about roughly 3,400 members. I feel very blessed. The hockey players to me are the greatest athletes in the world, and to be have a chance to represent them is quite a blessing.
Well, it certainly is a great sport, and we're really excited to have the number of games in town and the number of events and the number of former players, current players. Where are you going to be over the next 24-48?
I'll be mostly at the Oval. I'll be the Scotiabank's got a tent there, and we'll be signing autographs. And there's something I think called InstaPrint. I'm assuming that's you take pictures with us and get to sign them. And then, I'll be hanging around down by the Oval most of the day.
All right. Final question. Tough one, though. Who's a better golfer, you or Bobby Smith?
I don't know. That's a good question. Bobby's a pretty darn good athlete and pretty tall and lanky, but plus living in Phoenix half the year, I bet you right now Bobby's a better golfer than I am, but that's the nice thing about handicaps. I can always take money off them.
Fair enough, sir. Fair enough. Well, Mark Napier, thank you for being available to our show and looking forward to all kinds of great events over the weekend.
It will be a great, great weekend. Great for Halifax, and thanks for having me on, Sheldon.
All right. Take care of the cup.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, 5:15. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back on just a few moments' time. We're going to take up the conversation about, Sun News. I took a few emails, a few folks weighing in on their thoughts here today about Sun News. Okay, I can share those with you coming up. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more of our conversation, including the ethics professor at the University of King's College. Stick around.
Listening to the Sheldon McLeod Show.
At 5:18, 5:19 here on the show this afternoon. Thank you for tuning us in. And as a reminder, yes, as part of Rogers Hometown Hockey, we will be on the air this Sunday. Where? I don't know yet. We're waiting to find out from the weather forecasters. It depends what happens on Sunday. If it's really nasty, then we'll be broadcasting from our studios here. There'll still be lots of entertainment for you at Cole Harbour Place as part of Hometown Hockey, of course. If the weather does agree, that's where we'll be, over there. And we'll certainly be there to welcome you if you want to stop on by for a chat. We've been talking a little bit this afternoon about the end of an era. It was a bit of an experiment. It was fact. It turned out that a labor of love in many ways just didn't survive. And today we're talking about the end of Sun News. The Sun News Network faded early this morning. And our next guest on the program is someone who talks about media, teaches media, ethics professor David Swick, University of King's College. Should we be surprised that Sun is now faded off into the sunset?
Surprised. No. I mean, on a straight numbers... this was a service that was available to more than 5 million Canadians, and the numbers show that on average at any one time, about 8,000 people were watching it coast to coast. I actually did the quick math figuring out, okay, Nova Scotia has almost 1 million people. How many Nova Scotians would that be if the average worked across the country? In all of Nova Scotia, there are a little over 900,000 people. It would mean 228 Nova Scotians were watching this. And is that a surprise that if only a couple hundred Nova Scotians out of a million of us are bothering to watch it, that it would go down? No. On the other hand, it's interesting, you just said labor of love. Love wasn't the first word that came to mind for me for Sun News. It was a labor of something, and it didn't catch on.
You know, we've in the past had Chris Sims on our program, and we'll be speaking with her again in a few moments. 200 employees, 200 journalists, 200 people out of work. You know, if we will look at it strictly on those numbers, that's a bit of a bad thing for our industry today.
Yeah, well, I got to say, I mean, I shed a tear this morning when I saw that David Carr of the New York Times died. He was a brilliant journalist, and he will be missed. Will Sun News Network be missed? Well, I don't know. I think most Canadians will pay little or no attention, and I honestly think that it says something wonderful about the character of this country that Sun News Network did not catch on, because by the way that I think of journalists, I think a journalist is somebody who is willing to work extremely hard to get at something as close to something resembling truth as they can, and who is willing to be swayed by the information that they find. So yes, journalists are not robots. They all have opinions and thoughts, but they will go in and say they, you know, don't like Stephen Harper on something, and they go in and find that he's actually doing something good on an issue, and they will report that evenly and fairly as a positive thing for the Prime Minister. That's a journalist, somebody who will be swayed by the information. I think Canadians cottoned early onto the realization that Sun News Network was not doing that. They had a view. They were going to shove it up your nose no matter what information they found. They really were Fox News North, and that Canadians wouldn't eat it, I think that says something good about this country. 200 people out of work, I do feel badly for them and their families. Were these 200 people journalists, or were they some other strand of information? That's debatable.
David Swick, you know, we've heard that Sun had applied for and was hoping to get money from carriers as part of the network. You know, we have CTV, we have their news, all news channel, CBC, their all news channel. Those are all on, and for many, in many ways, on the basic programming, cable program. And it just, Sun just wasn't a part of that. They were not given the same access. Do you feel perhaps the numbers may have been different had they been in more homes?
Well, the CRTC, which tends to not always have a lot of teeth on a lot of things, they said that Sun News, they made it clear in 2013, they said Sun News didn't meet the criteria for mandatory coverage. I really wonder how much that actually would have helped them. They were available to 5 million Canadians, and they had 8,000. Okay, so if you'd expanded it to the whole 33 or 4 million Canadians, then they would have had, what, 50,000? I think that's always been their complaint that, oh, my God, if only we had the big deal. But to me, the numbers, they are so infinitesimally small. It's like, you know, political parties who say, you know, we are the, you know, Marxist-Leninist whatever, and we get, you know, 3,000 votes again across the country. Damn it all, the government's not being fair. They should give us a whole bunch of money and energy so we can spread our message across the country. You know, there's another extremist position, and I think this is the thing that Canadians didn't want what Sun News was offering, and the Sun News people, because they're such believers in this hardline conservative reactionary politics and supposed journalism, that they could not accept the reality as the answer, and so they were blaming it on an arm of the government, the CRTC. I think it was silly.
Well, you know, we've got lots that we could be talking about. You know, David Carr, maybe I'll give last word to you on him. A man who fell in the newsroom, who'd been such a strong voice for so long. Eh?
Oh, yeah, David Carr of the New York Times, C-A-R-R. If people don't know about him, go onto the Times site and check out some of his recent columns. He was an insightful guy who could really give you context to help you understand this technological revolution that we're all living through, with everything moving online and with TV in upheaval and newspapers being sold. And David Carr, I mean, he's an American, but a lot of what he said was relevant to us. And he had the experience and brains and commitment to truth that he helped me and a lot of other people understand industries that we wouldn't have understood otherwise. He was the New York Times media columnist. And, yeah, he died last night, going back to the newsroom after being on a panel and dropped dead at 58. And that is a real bloody shame because he was a great journalist.
Well, I'm grateful for your words, and I'm sorry I didn't hear about him sooner. And some folks I've spoken with are waiting for David Swick to start a column. We'll get you back on the program soon, sir. Thank you, and have a good weekend.
Okay, thanks, you too.
All right, bye. 5:26, our break, and on the other side, Chris Sims from said Sun News Network will be joining us. Richard Southern has the biz report.
This is the Sheldon McLeod Show on Halifax's number one station for news, talk, sports. News 95.7. Now, here's Sheldon.
All right, at 5:35, it's the home stretch here on this Friday the 13th. So far, been, well, I was going to say fairly lucky, but we've certainly had a lot of conversation this afternoon about a lot of different things. We talked a bit of hockey. We talked a little bit about February Heritage Day and the holiday on Monday, and had an opportunity to hear from you on the phones this afternoon. A few of you weighing in with your thoughts and on the discussion when it comes to the end of Sun News Network. The network went off the air early this morning. With that, a number of journalists, a number of former employees are now in the workforce. Someone who's been gracious enough to share some of her time with us over the last several months since this show went on the air. Actually, the first time I remember having a conversation, it was over a story we were doing with government talking about turkey regulations. And my producer said, we've got the reporter who had asked the minister or something about turkey regulations, and she's being accused of misrepresenting the facts, and she wants to straighten things out. And Chris Sims is on the phone right now. She's straightened things out, and we're certainly wishing good things for her. Chris, sorry to hear that this morning. It was a bit of a surprise to me. I can't imagine how you're doing today.
It's a pretty bad day. It truly is a Friday the 13th, Sheldon, and I just need to thank you very much for the time to speak on your radio waves here and speak with your audience. Yeah, that was back during when the Ministry of Agriculture, through the Turkey Board, was allowing them to crack down on the small-town butchers, saying that no matter if you've been in power or in business for 40 years perfectly safely with no complaints, you're no longer allowed to cut the heads off turkeys. And so I had done a long-form interview with Minister Caldwell, and then had included all of my interview in my story, and he said that it was taken out of context, blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't really have any hard feelings that way. I just needed to straighten the record out, saying, been doing this for 18 years and haven't misquoted anybody yet or taken anything out of context, so I needed to make that perfectly clear. It actually almost became a question right in Province House, a formal question to recant what he had said. But again, the story's not about me personally. It's about the actual topics, and I really appreciate your condolences. And I must say I was a bit taken aback by Professor David Swick. That's a lot coming from somebody who has a degree and who works at a university and who's training young journalists, and especially in the role of ethics in journalism and great journalists and new narratives, for him to be so categorically dismissive of us. Lots of us at Sun News Network are journalists, damn hardworking journalists who always make sure that we are accurate, and it's frankly depressing to see that lack of respect for a breadth of opinion and viewpoints and angles. And it's sad to see that coming from a teacher who has such influence. I actually was hoping that I might be able to teach a course at, it's offhand on the evenings or something to aspiring journalists, because I've been doing this for a long time. I've worked for many different outlets in radio, television, and newspapers. But I guess that's off the table because I'm not a journalist.
Chris, you know what? When he said that, a couple of things sprung to mind, and I would, jump to your defense, but you don't need me to defend you.
No, it's okay. I appreciate that.
I knew you would do that. I knew you would do it.
For the record, in case anybody wants to know, I'm a swing voter. I am a libertarian. I'm from small-town rural Canada, and I just so happen to think that people who shop at Canadian Tire and get their coffee at Timmy's and don't know what hand dancing is, they're Canadians too. And they deserve to have their voices heard on the news waves. And there's a certain set of people for whom that is alien. And I will take no truck from that.
I heard your conversation earlier today with on Rick's show, and one of the recurring themes I've heard about you, and you and I have never covered the same beat. We've sort of crossed paths based on, you know, the work I'm doing, which is as a talk show host, slightly different than that type of frontline thing. But the people that I know and trust who are out in those scrums say Chris Sims asks damn good questions, and she's not afraid of knowing what she putting it out there, and knowing what she's talking about, and holding people to account. And I, you know, regardless of who you're working for, that's an admirable quality. And I just needed to let you know that people are saying that about you.
That means so much to me, and I hope those same things are being said about my other colleagues who are across the country and are even in a foreign bureau in Washington right now who no longer have a home, and they work really hard too. And I just wanted to thank everybody who is saying those things. They're from Global, from CBC, from CTV, from the Chronicle Herald, and yourself, and it means a huge deal to my family. And just to give people a little window what it's like in scrums, you're sometimes in, you know, minus 20, for example, you know, out in, you know, a rural area, perhaps surrounded by a cottage with chemicals, and you're there to help each other. If you're there and somebody can't reach their microphone in, you reach over and you hold it for them. If, you know, they're running out of battery time, you lend them your charger. If you're running into a scrum, you got to know your talking points and know your background so you can ask good questions so you're not wasting people's time. And you always got to be that viewer's and that listener's eyes and ears. And that's what it's all about, being a good reporter. And it's also about being a decent person. And so I just wanted to say thank you to everybody who's saying that on my behalf today. It means a lot.
We chatted earlier today, and the idea that perhaps the Chris Sims Network could be born of this, it's been floated. People are asking where now. Maybe you should take on your own website, your own brand. But the man who put Sun on the air, that was a long journey for him.
Yeah, and I it chokes me up to think that people think that of me. That's a lot. And I just wanted, unfortunately, to level with people. In some capacity, you will see people who have both been journalists and editorialists at Sun News crop up somewhere else. Perhaps they'll have their own website, their own podcast. But a lot of us have families. We have mortgages. We need full-time paying jobs. And unfortunately, that won't be something that can sustain us. And I wanted just to say that, Corey Tenaik had this vision for Sun News Network, and contrary to some people's belief, it wasn't some, you know, evil takeover plan. He's a small-town kid from small-town Saskatchewan. You wouldn't even see it. It's not a map dot. It's young Saskatchewan. There's 400 people who live there. And when he was 18, he bought some luggage and moved to Quebec to learn French because he thought it was awesome. And from there, he became into politics and now into journalism. And he never saw himself and his cousin and his aunt and my cousin and my aunt and my family, all from rural, small-town Canada, he didn't see our views on TV. Not ever. Ever. And so he said, you know what? CBC and CTV and Global and all those guys, you know, that's fine. You know, that, you know, maybe those weren't his words, but he wasn't trying to shut them down. He wanted a voice for the small town rural Canadian, the Dougie, the ones that shops at Canadian Tire. And he spent years launching it and finally got Quebecor in. And Quebecor, I'm so happy that they had confidence in us for so many years. They put their money where their mouths were. This was a huge venture, and he slowly put together people from, you know, the National Post and the Western Standard and talk radio. I myself was with CTV for many, many years, and he slowly collected people of, you know, kind of, you know, I would describe myself as libertarian. He also collected people like Warren Kinsella, who is a huge liberal, and employed them because he said, we want people to be daring and swing for the fences and talk about sacred cows and barbecue them occasionally for fun and do things differently. And that won't, unfortunately, I got to tell you, happen again in a large scale way. It's just not going to, because that took about 8 years of someone's life and millions of dollars.
You know, we could talk at great lengths about maybe why it didn't work, perhaps some of the concerns people had about the challenges that an upstart network have in our country. But I just wanted to thank you for being a part of the show and wish you all the best, Chris, and hope that, you know, it turns out well. You know, and I'm not asking you to dish on what they're doing, but they are helping out a bit, aren't they?
They are, and yeah. I must say, Sun Media has been a wonderful company to work for. Like, I don't care if you know what level of the spectrum you're at or what part of the spectrum you're at. They've been a great company, and they've treated all of their employees very well, and they're treating me well too. They're doing all they can, but we can't expect Quebecor losing millions of dollars every year to stay on the air. And I just did want to correct one thing. Mm-hmm. It's been frequently said by our haters or people who didn't like Sun News Network for whatever reason that, well, it was available to a few million people. Yeah, very, very lately it was available if you knew where it was, if you knew what it was, and you wanted to watch it. But that doesn't mean we get fee-for-service. That's a huge difference. The idea of viewers versus fee-for-carriage is enormous, and it's millions of dollars, and we never did get that level playing field. And I'm willing to bet that if we had had, you know, mandatory carriage, even for 10 years, say that the other guys got it for 17 and 26, respectively, and you just give it to us for 5 or 10, I bet you that we would have at least been competitive with them and been making money. And I'm just really sad, not just for myself, because, you know, yeah, we've got a family, and I'm now scrambling to find work, but for all those thousands of people who wrote in from Bracebridge to Truro saying this means a lot to me, I'm sad for them because it did mean a lot to them.
Well, Chris Sims, hopefully what began as a friendship on the radio will continue beyond that. Thank you.
You betcha. Thanks so much, Sheldon.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. 5:46, quick break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Sheldon McLeod Show on Halifax's home for talk, News 95.7. We'll be back with more in a moment.
Never work another day in your life. What if you can buy $50,000 triplexes that cash flow $1,000 per month each? Hi, I'm Steve Martell, Canada's only U.S. real estate expert. My students have bought over $330 million worth of U.S. real estate in the last 3 years alone.
The system really works the way Steve said it would work.
229 doors.
6 unit in Vegas, 12 unit in Atlanta, 10 unit closing next week.
We're about to close on a 300 unit hotel in Orlando.
Screw working a job when you can buy U.S. real estate at 70% off. I'm coming to Halifax where I'll personally be hosting a 3-day live U.S. real estate implementation class, and I want you to come for free. That's 3 full days learning everything about buying U.S. real estate with me, but it's only free for the first 10 signups, and then the price goes up to $2,500. So you need to reserve your seat now at www.steveinhalifax.com. That's steveinhalifax.com.
Renovating? Before you rip out your attic, stop and call the professionals at Envirobate. Dangerous materials like asbestos and mold could be lurking behind your walls, threatening to invade your environment. Envirobate, an eco-friendly company, is trained to dispose of hazardous materials properly and efficiently. Is it really worth putting your family's health at risk to save a few bucks? Environmentally friendly and cost-effective, Envirobate is growing on great relationships. Check their credentials at envirobate.ca.
I love you.
Charm Diamonds. This Valentine's Day, sweep her off her feet with our dancing diamonds. Perpetual motion diamonds that waltz to the beat of her heart, starting at just $2.99. Or make her heart go all aflutter with a beautiful heart pendant, starting at just $99. A symbol of your love, worn close to her heart. This Valentine's Day, a little charm goes a long way. Charm Diamonds.
Next time on The Rick Howe Show.
A new report says despite declining student enrollment, spending on public schools in Canada is way up. Education consultant Paul Bennett will take a closer look at the numbers, including Nova Scotia, where enrollments are down nearly 20%, but spending is up over 50%. Richard Zarowski joins us with a special Tuesday edition of The Science Files, and we'll find out what's playing at the movies on Cheap Night with the Chronicle Herald's Stephen Cook.
Don't miss The Rick Howe Show, weekdays from 9 to 1 on News 95.7.
This is the Sheldon McLeod Show on News 95.7.
It's 5:49. Look at that. Daylight. Daylight at this time of the day. Oh, my. It's been a long winter, hasn't it? Or at least it's been a long February, if that's possible. 10 hours, 19 minutes of sunlight. That is a welcome sight, my weary bones. We'll be shoveling for sure this weekend. How much? Still don't know. We're going to be here on Sunday. Well, maybe not right here, but somewhere close abouts. It is Rogers Hometown Hockey on Sunday. Scheduled for Cole Harbor. It's going to be all kinds of hockey talk right here on the radio. And invite you to be a part of all the fun here this afternoon. And we've got someone brand new to the program to talk about. And, you know, the Maritime Beer Report, Todd the Beer Dude, he's somewhere sunny. And sun in his buns. We're reaching out here this afternoon to Matthew Small. Matt is behind drinkandbrew.com. He has a passion for the suds, and it's Friday. Let's talk about it. Hey, Matt, anything favorite, anything new, anything on your agenda that you're going to try this weekend?
This weekend, I got a couple of my own brews that I put on tap, and looking forward to trying them.
Okay, so when you are brewing, are you one of these guys that uses a kit, or do you go through the whole work, the effort of you know, grains and milled grains and making that tea, making the wort yourself?
Yeah, I'm one of those guys who puts himself through the ringer and does the whole thing right from scratch, yeah.
You know, that's how many of the breweries here in the Atlantic region are starting nowadays. It's people with a passion like yourself who've decided, hey, let's take this to the next level. Is it tough to do? Is it something that there's, you know, lots of information out there to help you through?
There's tons of information out there to help you out, for sure. There's lots of really good books. There's podcasts, YouTube. YouTube helped me a lot. And the community itself is more than willing to help. There's a lot of good people out there.
So tell me, when you started off, how did you decide that this was a passion that you wanted to pursue?
Well, I'm one of those guys who likes to make their own everything, basically, cooking and everything like that. And I've always had this thought in my head that I could do that. You know, ordinary people brew every day at the breweries. Why couldn't I do it at home? A lot of people did it. So I just, a friend of mine, he had the stuff, and he's like, sure, go ahead, try it. And I did, and instantly hooked.
How much equipment does it take?
Initially starting up, it really doesn't take a whole lot. If you start off making kits, you almost have enough in your house probably to do it today. Really, you just need something to ferment it in and a big pot, basically. And when it comes to when you want to step up to the all grain, I use a picnic cooler that I've converted, and I got a large pot, and that's, you know, it doesn't take much more than that, really.
Yeah, well, you're kind of a freak here. I'm seeing you're doing your own yeast.
Yeah, that's a little more advanced than a beginner. Yeah, I've started to take my own yeast cultures and plate them out on petri dishes and get a little bit of a mad scientist lab going on in my house here. I plate them all out and I do culture them myself. Yeah.
Wow. So all of this is what you've been able to learn through books and through the internet.
Yeah, basically, they're the resources out there are that good. And you talk to you go to the local brew pub or the local brewery, those guys are more than willing to talk to you too a lot of the times. And there's clubs and stuff and forums online. There's all kinds of help. The people who do it are more than willing to share, for the most part, their information they've learned and their time and everything. So it's really, anyone can learn to do it.
Is that why you've got your Drink and Brew website, just to help educate?
I when I first started out, I'm one of those people who likes to soak up all the information. I read a lot, and I gathered all the information myself, and I was constantly being asked questions, like, well, how do I do this? How do I do that? What do you think of this? So I said, you know, I'm answering the questions already. I might as well do the website and try to add to the community.
How much of what you're doing is just because you like beer?
It's all because I like beer. It really is. it's a passion for beer itself, because I mean, I like to drink it, but honestly, I like to make it better. It's a hobby. It's obsession. It depends on you ask me or ask my wife. I do it because it's there's something about doing it myself and taking pride in having done it myself, and I can say that it's something that I did.
All right. Time for some horn tooting. How does it turn out? How do you like it? The stuff you're making.
The stuff I make, honestly, I like it a lot. People tell me it's great. But when you give free beer away, a lot of people tell you it's great.
Good point.
But for the most part, I think that my beer turns out pretty good. There's very, very few that I would him and haw and say, nah, I don't like that so much. It's time and patience and all that, and you can get a pretty good product.
Have you entered any of these competitions? I know several breweries around the Maritimes are offering up a chance for people to submit their own brews.
I haven't yet. I wholly intended on this year, but due to my own poor timing, I didn't get into the Garrison's brew off this year. But I certainly will be looking forward to doing that. And I do keep my ear to the ground, and I see there's quite a few competitions coming up around the whole region.
Well, there's no shortage of microbreweries, small breweries, and mid-size. You know, craft is well, it's a term that's thrown around a lot, but it's certainly growing. Thanks for sharing a bit of your passion with us here this afternoon.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
All right. All the best, Matt. If you're looking for his website, drinknbrew.com, and it is a vast resource of information for you. And, you know, it's true. There are many people who are willing to share in their passion by sharing their knowledge, whether it's cooking, whether it's beer, whether it's just about anything, whether it's hockey. This weekend, of course, with the hometown hockey. Tomorrow is the big hockey day in Canada. And Rick Howe is going to be on location down at the Oval. Invite you to stop on by, look for all the teams in the 95.7 jerseys and the 92.9. It's going to be a great weekend that way. We'll be maybe in Cole Harbour, perhaps here. It's all depend on the weather. Don't stray too far from your radio, okay? On behalf of my producer, Jennifer Grudich, I want to thank her, as always, for doing all the great stuff that she does. And she's my rock. She is. Thanks to you guys for tuning in. And we're going to be back with McCowan for a couple hours, 7:30 pregame tonight for the Mooseheads game. All right. Business report.